Blog Talk Radio.
From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
Yes, it is the Boomer and the Babe Show one more time on a Thursday, November 10th, 2011. Broadcasting from the Feeding Arizona complex in Youngtown, Arizona, which is all part and parcel of the Northwest Valley Food Bank, Valley View Community Food Bank. And Valley View Community Food Bank is always in need of your donations and your food and money. Every year this time, Jesse Ramirez, who is the executive director and founder of Valley View Community Food Bank, starts preparing for his large Thanksgiving feast, serving many hundreds of people here in the Northwest Phoenix Valley. And everything that Jesse does and every bit of food that Jesse gives out to folks is absolutely 100% free. They're the only food bank in the area that we know of that gives the food away free. So a combination of Feeding Arizona, which gathers food from all over the southwest region of the country and disseminates it to other food banks, and then also Valley View Community Food Bank prepares the food baskets. Last year he gave out thousands, literally thousands of turkeys, and cooked hundreds more for his annual Thanksgiving feast. So we welcome anybody to give a donation, money, food, turkey. If you're local and you want to give some food, donate some food or turkeys, you're feel welcome and glad to have you do so. You can go ahead and contact them via Google. Just Google ValleyViewCommunityFoodBank.com or go to their website, ValleyViewCommunityFoodBank.com, and give them a call, find out what they need, what they can use, which is, generally speaking, just about anything. And this is the Boomer and the Babe Show, as I said, and as we entered the program. Boomer and the Babe Incorporated is a multimedia, multifaceted company. We are involved in many things besides this radio show. We do mini books, e-books. We publish those for other people and ourselves. Any of our mini book publishers, or rather our e-book publishers, also have their own radio show on the Boomer and the Babe Network here on Blog Talk, so we invite you to listen to those good folks as well. We do videos for your website and promotion, and we also do promotional products as well as overall small business consulting. So as a multimedia, multifaceted marketing company, we would like to help your small business grow, sustain itself, and be more successful in what can be determined by some to be trying times, as they say. Economically speaking, we can try to help you out. Our guest today is a fine gentleman, writer, blogger, speaker. His name is Fran Larkin. He is a retirement, I guess we could call him a retirement specialist. Fran speaks, talks, and blogs about retirement and things that people can get involved in retirement and how to make retirement a happy occurrence and something that can be fulfilling as well. So I'd like to welcome to the show Fran Larkin. Fran, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Pete. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Great to be with you again.
Well, it's nice to have you here. I know we've spoken on the phone a couple of times prior to doing the show.
Yeah.
And what I wanted to make sure that we got information about you is, what did you do before you became Fran Larkin, retired person? What did you do as far as work, and where do you hail from? And give us a little of your background prior to the work that you're doing now.
Okay, yeah, you know, it's almost hard to remember that. It's been 7 years almost since I've been retired or in my next phase of my life. But I worked for IBM for 35 years. I started in 1970, and I retired in December of 2004. You know, I had a variety of jobs in IBM. I was mainly in the administrative and business controls area and customer service. You know, I had a variety of jobs. I was a people manager, project manager, program manager. I had jobs with regional responsibility, United States, and my last job I had some worldwide responsibility. So I grew up on Cape Cod way back in the 40s and 50s, and in fact, I'm writing a memoir of growing up back then. That's on my to-do list. So I grew up in Cape Cod, and then I went off to the University of Massachusetts in Amherst, and after graduation, I, after many interviews, I finally got a job with IBM. And that same year, I got married. We've been married now 41 years, and beautiful, wonderful wife, and three wonderful, great kids. So, and it was a lot of fun going through all that, and it's a lot of fun now. I mean, it's these are exciting times, at least for me.
Fran, when so many baby boomers nowadays, times being what they are finding themselves out of work and not necessarily expecting to be out of work. Maybe it was a reduction in force. Maybe it was a company that went belly up. When you retired, was it a planned retirement, or was it something that came upon you rather unexpectedly?
Yeah, I was lucky, Pete. It was planned. I know a lot of people at IBM, it wasn't planned, and just like in the cross American business. The last few years at IBM weren't fun anymore. A lot of changes in IBM as it was across American business. I mean, there were many years at IBM. I could not wait to get up in the morning and get into work. We worked a lot of hours, but we had a lot of fun. We all made a difference. We were all recognized and rewarded for it. And that was kind of going away. So, you know, my wife and I talked it over. You can always use more money. But I retired on my own terms. I gave notice in September of 2004. So, and then I retired at the end of December. And I'm lucky because I got a pension from IBM. It's not a huge pension. It doesn't have a cost of living. But so I was very fortunate. One of the things, and I also talk about this in my retirement talks, is I actually hold up like a $5 bill and a watch. And it comes down to time versus money. And, you know, we could always use more money, right? And then after I retired, that's when the recession and all the economic problems kicked in. So, you know, our investments took a hit. But I just decided it was time to do these things that I always wanted to do. And you know, how much is it worth to any of us just to have the time to do what you want to do? So I talk about that in my retirement talks, but that's what I really considered. And my wife and I went over it, and we said, hey, it's time. You've got all these projects you want to work on. You know, we got enough money to get by. You know, we can't go to Europe every weekend, but, you know, we got plenty of money to get by. So we decided to retire.
Well, I've used this example on the show before, talking to other people on similar subjects. My father was very fortunate. He retired from Ford Motor Company back in Michigan at age 55. And got himself a nice retirement, and lived a nice retirement life, of course, with pension and eventually some Social Security and so on, until such time as some illness, Alzheimer's caught him, and then it was not all that pleasant. But nonetheless, after he passed, my mother still had his pension, his portion of the Social Security plus her own, and she's now living I'm going to say a comfortable life. I mean, she doesn't have an abundance of money, but she's got a little. She's got a little positive cash flow every month. So that's a good thing. And there are a lot of people that have even just a minimal amount of positive cash flow. If they have that after all the bills are paid, they are very fortunate nowadays, because those pension plans just aren't there. You mentioned that when you were working with IBM, the last several years were not as enjoyable as it had been. What did you attribute that to?
Well, at IBM, we, and I'll just talk about IBM, we never laid anybody off until 1993. You had a job for life, you know, unless you stole company secrets or assaulted somebody.
Right.
You had a job for life. When I first joined IBM, all your medical was paid for, everything. So what happened in the 90s, as the companies and IBM faced all these economic pressures, you know, they started increasing what we paid for our medical. They started sending jobs down to Brazil, over to India. You know, I had a lot of friends whose jobs went away, and they were told to, you know, get a, you know, find a job in someplace else or you're gone. So the attitude changed. So that really bothered me. The raises weren't like they were. The awards and the recognition weren't like they were. And we used to get nice raises every year. If you did, worked on projects that were above and beyond the call of duty, you used to get cash awards, you know, several thousand dollars sometimes. And a lot of times you just get a pat on the back and your manager would say, hey, thanks for working late on that project, you know, Friday night or coming in Saturday, and they give you a like a $250 night on the town, you know, for you and your spouse to go out. So we used to do a lot of that, and that just started declining. You know, it didn't go away, but it was tough working without raises, and it was tough seeing your friends getting laid off or let go. And the people that were left had to do a lot more work. They had to do the work of the people that were gone. So it was, so that's why it wasn't fun anymore. And that was going on in a lot of American business. But, you know, let me just be clear. IBM was and is a tremendous company. They were very good to me. And at the same time, I was very good to them. You know, I have a pension now that I never contributed to. So, you know, I'm thankful for that. There's no cost of living, but, again, I mean, you know, I could live another 30 years and get that pension, and then when I go, like you were talking about, my wife gets it, as well as my right. Social Security and the investments. So that's kind of, you know, why it wasn't as fun anymore. It's still a great company, but the whole business model has changed, you know, for all of us.
Well, the business model...
It's not fun anymore. Let's move to the next phase of my life.
Well, the business model has changed. There's absolutely no doubt about that. There were some of the companies I know went through a point of laying people off for a reduction in force, and then they had the ability to bid as an independent contractor, bid on their own job, basically. It was a way for companies to save on the pensions and the benefits and the insurances and so on and so forth, because then now they're dealing with self-employed people, and then it's up to them to get their own benefits, whatever it is that they thought they could get. It changed the whole business climate, not only for big business but business in general, and a lot of these small operations sprung up. I remember years ago when there were people that were making wiring harnesses for taillights for the big three automakers in Michigan, in Detroit, and they had this little mini factory welding things and soldering things together in their garage and making a lot of good money as a little job shop in their garage in Michigan supplying to General Motors or Ford or Chrysler. And those types of things that were being done there are now being done elsewhere, being done overseas and so on and so forth, because it's even less expensive to do them overseas. And it changed entirely the economic structure of the country, and I think that's in many cases what's led us to the situations that we're in today. And it's nice to see that there are still some people who are of my age, approximately, or my genre, that still have managed to get out with pensions and so on, like you have, because...
And I'll be forever grateful for IBM for that. It's like, kind of like you mentioned about your father. I have a pension.
Right.
We have some investments, and we took Social Security when we took 62.
Right. Right.
So we're getting by. Like I said, we're not rich. We're not jetting off to the islands every other weekend. But, you know, we're doing all the things we want to do. So I ask everybody in my talks to consider that. You know, some of these financial advisors say you need 80 to 90% of what you're making, and that's not true.
No, it's not.
I mean, I'm living, Kathy and I, my wife, are living proof of that. You do not need all that. So,
well, it's what they think you need, and that's part and parcel of some of our problems as well. I mean, they come up with all these investment structures and investment type things because they seem to think that's what you need, and then all of a sudden you start getting into that, and they're the only people making the money on the deal, and you're still no better off than you were to begin with.
Versus money.
That's right. And it's
worth all of us to, like I said earlier, to have the time to do anything you want to do, you know, within reason. You know?
Sure. Well, there's something to be said for living happily and comfortably without worry.
Right.
There's something to be said for that. And that's really, I think, if more people would have that as a goal and as an objective, rather than living a jet-set life in retirement and flitting off to the south of France or wherever it is.
Right. That's one of the books that I recommend when I give my talks. It's called How to Retire Happy, Wild, and Free by Ernie J. Zelensky. And he talked about all this, you know, that you don't need as much money. And it's just a wonderful time once you retire to do all the things you wanted to do and to be all the people you want to be. You know, when I'm in kicking off my talks, I say to people, all right, what do you want to be now that you've grown up?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. You're 55. You're 60. You're 65. You're retired. Okay. What do you want to be now that you've grown up? So.
Now, when did you start to think about what you were going to do when you retired? I mean, was it prior to your retirement or after your retirement or during your retirement?
Yes. And that's one of my key messages here today and in my talks, that we have to plan for it, just like we have to do the financial planning, which a lot of people do for retirement. There's a USA Today article several years ago. It said 90% of the people that retire don't do this emotional planning. So I was lucky. I just had read a lot of stuff. I started thinking about it 2 or 3 years before I retired, and I encourage everybody to think about it then. You know, there's so many stories, and I saw it at IBM. People retired, didn't do any planning, and their work was their life. They had no hobbies, no interest outside of IBM, and, you know, they just stagnated, just sat around. And they had all this wonderful experience, all this intellectual capital, and they didn't use it. So I said, well, I don't want to be like that. So, you know, I started jotting down notes. I tell this story a lot. IBM, you always go into meetings, right? So I have my notebook in my left hand, my cup of coffee in the right, you know, the official drink of IBM. And so we get to meetings, and I'd be sitting there waiting for the meeting to start, and I just start jotting down notes and of what I was going to do in retirement, you know, 2 or 3 years away. And there's one guy was sitting next to me, and he said, Fran, what are you doing? And I told him, and he said, geez, I'm retiring in a couple of years, and I haven't even thought of any of that. So I said, well, you better start thinking about it. And so then I started reading more and more about it, and I started writing down what I wanted to do. I had a set of goals, which I talk about in my talks, you know, having a vision, having a mission, and having a set of goals for what you want to do in retirement. So, yeah, so I started thinking about it well in advance when we hit, when I retired 2 days before Christmas, December 23rd, 2004, we flew out to Arizona, out to Chandler to see our daughter and her husband, and spent a week out there for Christmas and New Year's, and came back, and I hit the ground running. So that's what I recommend to everybody.
So now in your retirement, you've mentioned the fact that you're giving talks, and we'll get a little bit more into that as this conversation goes. But typically, aside from giving your talks and some of the other things you're involved in, what do you do for just plain kickback enjoyment and pleasure as far as getting out and doing things? I've got a list of things here, but
As you can see from what you've seen on my website, you can see all the projects. But my wife and I love to kayak. You know, we're right near the Merrimack River here, Ipswich River, some lakes. We like to bike. We like to hike. We like to walk. We got all kinds of walking and hiking trails in the Newburyport area, you know. And Newburyport, by the way, is about 35 minutes north of Boston and just south of New Hampshire. We go out to the beach. We got the beautiful beach, Plum Island, 7 miles long. We walk the beach. I pick cranberries out there. I read. I paint. I draw. I write. I'm even fooling around with poetry. People that know me will go, "What? What's she doing?" Well, I have this whole presentation on all the time, but what I'm focusing on, in fact, is this. If there's any of my family listening, they don't even know this. I already have a name for it. It's named after my mother, and it's called My Name is Norma. And I've written a whole bunch of poems, and the big focus is on Alzheimer's, what my mother went through and what I saw other people go through, what I saw at the nursing home where she was, what's gone on in society, and it's all an open verse. So I like to cook. You know, I like to barbecue. I have a smoker out back, so I do ribs and brisket and turkey breast.
I'm coming to your house for a picnic, that's for sure.
You can. And I do, you know, coleslaw that goes with it, and homemade cornbread, and I'm a New England guy, so I use B&M Baked Beans. They're a local company. I love them, and I spice them up. I do a cherry cobbler or a peach cobbler. So those are some of the things. You know, the whole retirement isn't doing projects and going around giving talks.
Well, it sounds to me like you've got yourself pretty well set up in a catering business if you just go out and sell that to folks. I used to be in the catering business, and that's pretty close.
You can buy a trailer for maybe $3,000, $2,000, and I can attach it to my truck, and you can go to sites, you can go to family events, and you can cook all those things I just said. So I thought of doing that. That's still on the list.
But, well, let me tell you, Fran, that's exactly what I did as a line of work. I had a trailer. I had a barbecue trailer. It was actually made out of the bed of an old pickup truck with the axle and the wheels and everything on it. And the guy that built it fixed it up and reinforced the bed and had some heavy steel in there. You could put wood in it or coals in it. And it had a four foot by 8 foot cooking surface that I could, with a ship's wheel and a boom and some chains, and I could raise and lower the grill into and out of the coals. And
oh,
I cooked fried
hungry.
Sausage and beans and chicken, and I did that. And I was the entertainment caterer for the San Diego Chargers in San Diego, California, for 9 years.
Oh wow!
I'll send you a private note on that. There you go. I did tailgates for people. Up to 1,500 people came from Green Bay that I fed them.
Oh, my God.
It was unbelievable. It was just unbelievable.
Wow.
I still have some of the best tri-tip in the world that I just resurrected just 2 weeks ago for a fundraiser for this food bank, and I had vegetarians eating beef.
Okay.
Well, it's that good.
A couple years ago, our son got married, and they got married here in Newburyport, so we had the rehearsal dinner here. So one of the features of the rehearsal dinner was I did a couple of briskets in the smoker, and so everybody loved them. And speaking of all this, the local paper here, the Newburyport Daily News, they're going to do an article next Thursday. They're coming over here, in fact, a week from today, right about this time, and they want to see all this. So I'm going to be cooking up all those things I just said. They're going to be taking pictures and putting it all a big write-up in the paper, and they're going to include my recipes. So, yeah, it's all part of the retirement. And, you know, some mornings I can't wait to get up. You know, this is like IBM in the old days.
Yeah.
You know, I'm up at 5 o'clock some mornings.
Fran, if I could give you one piece of advice, don't give them the recipe.
Well, I don't have any secret recipes. I mean, how to cook a brisket, you know, I just tell them, you know, here's the rub, put the rub on, and baste it in beer every hour. I mean, I don't tell them what the rub is.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, keep the rub.
Right, I got a secret ingredient in my rub, you know, that you don't give out. I just use a generic rub.
Yeah, and if you tell them, you got to kill them.
Yep. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So it's
just great fun. Like I said, I can't wait to get up in the mornings, and I'm working on all these projects, and I'm writing. I also took painting classes and drawing classes. So I'm, I do about a painting a month now. I've done 12 in the past year. And, yeah, that's one of the things I talk about, Pete, in my talks. It's this giant smorgasbord out there.
It is.
And not just for retirement people, you know, for everybody. There's so many things to do. There's so many hobbies. I mean, whether you're 20, 50, or 70, or 90, and there's so many things to get involved in and try out, and it drives me nuts when people just sit around and watch a lot of TV and surf the net. I mean, I have my favorite TV shows, and I have my favorite websites, but that's not the mainstay of the day.
What's interesting is I wrote a blog, and I talk occasionally on small businesses, as I alluded to in the opening. People have this tendency, especially nowadays, that seems that if they're out of work or they've had a bit of a setback, that they just go, oh, my gosh, and they wring their hands, and what am I going to do? Well, the reality is there are many things that you can do. Even if you're in business and maybe business is slow, you can add little things to your business that have very little cost, if any at all, and it'll just throw in an extra $100 a month or an extra $200 a month to your business. So then what you have at that point is just another stream of income that you can enjoy doing it, and it'll take some of the pressure off. And it is part of that smorgasbord, and all you have to do is sit back and just kind of think about things a little bit, and you can certainly come up with something that you can enjoy doing and might make you a dollar or two to make your life a little easier, a little more comfortable, if you want to look at it from a money-making point of view as well.
Well, you know, on that point, I'll give you another example. I'm doing something like that. I have a very good friend, and he's got Parkinson's. In fact, he's my best friend. He was the first guy to come over and shake my hand at IBM when I joined IBM in January 26, 1970. So he can't drive now, and he can't do a lot of things, but I take him out 3 days a week for several hours, and we do errands, and we go exercising when he feels like it. We tell stories about the old days, you know, and we laugh and we joke, and we go out and get a coffee. Sometimes we get breakfast. But they have this long-term health insurance that pays for companions. So, you know, I didn't know that. I mean, I was taking my friend out without getting paid, and then they were talking to their insurance company, and they said, well, you can reimburse him.
Wow.
You know, from the insurance company. So it's a win-win. You know, I pick up a few extra dollars every week and help him out, and it helps his wife out because it gives her the time. So, yeah, there's those type of things out there. The key is just to be involved in as many things and, you know, spread as many tentacles out in as many areas you can, and stuff will happen.
Well, you see people that are retired a lot, I would imagine, in your travels and your talks and so on and so forth. You're probably dealing a lot with the retired communities. What are some of the mistakes that you see people have made in their retirement?
Well, number one, they didn't plan for it. That's the biggest mistake that I see. They just kind of stumbled into it. They don't have a lot of activities and hobbies and interests, and they're not taking care of themselves. I mean, those are some of the biggest things I've seen. You know, they're not exercising, they're not eating right. I mean, what good is it if we worked all these years, you know, whatever it was, 25, 30, 35, or 40, then if our health isn't any good, to enjoy retirement or this next phase of our life or the next third, you know, whatever you want to call it. So, you know, they got to exercise and eat right and go for all their doctor's appointments. I see a lot of people don't do that. They don't sample this mortgage board we talked about. There's so many things out there, and they don't do it, and it drives me nuts. They didn't plan for it, so they just kind of stumble into it.
And just kind of let it evolve.
Yeah, let it evolve, and there's an awful lot of depression out there that's related to this. That's why I encourage everybody to think about this, put a plan in. Most of the seminars I do, and I've done, I think, 17 seminars in the last couple of years, just on this topic. When people are leaving, you know, we're talking and shaking hands and stuff, and they go, wow, there's a lot to think about that I'd never realized before.
Right.
And I say, yeah, you know, if we all want to have a healthy, happy, and productive retirement, there's a lot of stuff to think about. So those are some of the things I see. Some people also get confused with work. You know, they think that you don't have to work in retirement, and I have a whole chart on that. I said, yeah, it's a big part of keeping busy, right? Is you can work part time somewhere, you can start your own business, start your own nonprofit. Just all kinds of things to do, and you know every town has a list of volunteer opportunities, and you know we all have all this. You know, I call it. Like me personally, I've got 35 years of business experience. I've got 64 years of life experience. So, I mean, that's a lot of, I call it, intellectual capital.
Well, it's all.
And we all have that.
A lot of transferable information that can be
used.
Yeah,
and we all have that. It doesn't matter what your job was, what your career was, and you have all these life experiences that go with it. Give it back.
Well,
that's another thing I see. There's a lot of people don't give back.
Well, I liken it to this transferable experience. I liken it to if I were looking for a salesperson, as an example, and somebody says, well, I've never sold time and space for radios and publications, but I have sold pharmaceuticals. Well, the difference between pharmaceuticals and time and space are two radically different items. But the sales skill, the knowledge of how to sell is the same. The rest of it is just product knowledge. I mean,
right.
You know, whether you're selling an IBM computer or you're selling a hand crank pencil sharpener, sales is sales, and nothing ever happens in this world until a sale is made, period, end of conversation. Now, all it is product knowledge. You either know about the computer or you know about the hand crank pencil sharpener, and you can learn one or the other to sell one or the other. And that's what people sometimes don't realize when they're in retirement or semi-retirement or whatever they want to call it. They have this wealth of knowledge, as you indicated, through life and through work that can be used some other way for the positive good, for communities, for nonprofits, for starting another business of their own, for doing whatever else they may want to do.
Absolutely.
So,
and that's one of my key messages in my talks. And going back to one of your earlier question about some of the mistakes. I don't know if it's a mistake, but part of the planning process is a lot of people don't have their goals written down.
Right.
And I call it vision. You know, how do you want to be seen in retirement? You know, how do you want to be perceived? And then, you know, your goals are what do you want to accomplish? And you can also call your goals the bucket list if you want to.
It's interesting.
You know,
we have a fellow that does a show. Actually, there's two of them, Tom Legering and Terry Munther, do a show on our Boomer the Babe Network, and they call it Success or Failure, The Choice is Yours. And it's based on a book that Tom wrote about business plans and planning your life and so on and so forth. And he says one of the first things you start with is you start with your epitaph. Write your epitaph. And then once you've written your epitaph, what do you have to do to have that epitaph the way you want it to be?
You got it. Yep.
And it was, it's a very interesting way of doing it. I want to talk a little bit to you about your book, Five Words and Then Some. How did you get the motivation for the book? When did you write it? Tell us a little bit of the background of the book.
Yeah, you know, with all the things that I'm working on, and, you know, they're all important, and I like them all, but I'll tell you, this is, at the moment, this is my one true passion. This started years ago when we had family members, you know, our kids, you know, our three kids, neighbors' kids were graduating. I had some nieces and nephews who graduated from high school. So I just typed up some, you know, four or five pages, kind of like words of advice from Uncle Fran, you know. I started out with my nieces and nephews on five or six pages, just kind of words of advice, you know, to help them.
Sort of like
and
the graduate.
Kept growing.
Kind of like the
Pardon?
Graduate. The guy says, plastics.
Right.
You remember that movie? With Dustin Hoffman? The neighbor says, here's my advice to you, plastics. So
right.
Uncle Fran gave him advice. What was your advice?
I gave a little bit more than that, but, you know, it's kind of, it started off, you know, these are some things that could help you succeed in life. And so I just started expanding that. I just had thoughts, and I kept adding to it. And I kept, you know, sending it to more people. I put it into a binder. You know, I type up a page and I put it into one of those clear plastic sheets, and then I put it into a little small three-ring binder. And then one day, and this is really what kicked it off, is I got a letter from a friend of ours' daughter who was at Penn State. She was a freshman. She was having a horrible time, you know, freshman year, big school, away from home, tough adjustment for all of us. And she came back from classes pretty discouraged. And she had a copy of my book. It wasn't the book, right? It was the binder. But and somehow she brought it with her to college, which I was surprised. So, but she read it, and she wrote me this note and this letter, and I actually carry the letter around. I don't read it per se, and I don't give out her name, but I actually hold it up. I mean, I read it, and I just about had tears in my eyes. I was in the kitchen of our house at that time in Connecticut, and I actually had to go outside. So the rest of my family wouldn't see my eyes moisting up. She just said what a difference it made. You know, she was discouraged and down. She read my book. It gave her the hope and inspiration to continue. And she did. She graduated in 4 years, and now she's studying to be a doctor. So I said, geez, you know, maybe I'm onto something. So I put this thing all together, and then I read up about how to get a book published. So I wrote these query letters to all these agents that were specializing in new authors and in inspirational and motivational books. So I got a whole box of rejection letters.
Yeah.
So I had to go back and read my book again because one of the words is perseverance, one of the five words. And so I ended up self-publishing it through a company called iUniverse. I read up on them. They had a great reputation. So it's what they call print-on-demand. So you can go into Amazon and order the book. You can go into any bookstore in the United States and order it. But the bookstores, like your local Barnes & Noble, won't have it on the shelf. They have to order it because it's self-published and print-on-demand. So it came out 2 years ago, March. You know, the average self-published book sells about 120 copies.
Yeah, generally the publisher buys them himself.
Right. You know, and so you buy them and you give them to you, or your family and friends and relatives buy it, and, you know, that's it. Well, I'm up to about 900 books right now.
Good for you.
Yeah, so, you know, that's going good. But the key thing is I go around and I talk to high schools, kids, and I talk to community groups. One of the things, and we read about this all the time, and you hear it on all the TV shows about education, you know, 30% of the kids in this country that enter ninth grade don't graduate.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. And the inner cities is 50 to 70%. 50% of the kids that enter college in the freshman year don't ever graduate. You know, we got to keep these kids in school. If you don't graduate from high school, I mean, what happens to you, right? If you're lucky, you got a minimum wage job. You're wandering the streets. The exposure to drugs and crime is there. Girls can get pregnant, and it's a vicious cycle, and for us to be able to compete with the countries overseas that right now are way ahead of us in science and math, you know, we've got to have this education. But so I try to give them, when I talk to the kids, I try to talk about hope and inspiration, because I tell them, look, I came from humble beginnings. I overcame a lot of personal challenges. My grades weren't great, my SATs, none of that stuff. But I applied everything that's in this book, these five words, you know, hard work, enthusiasm, positive attitude, perseverance, and fun, to everything I did, and I've had a wonderful life. And if I can do it, you can do it. So, I mean, that's kind of what my key message is when I go around and speak to groups. You know, the main focus is the young adults graduating, and we have about 3 million kids that graduate from high school, college, vocational school, and get out of the military every year. So that's who I'm trying to reach. So I'm trying to give them hope and inspiration. And, you know, what's in here also applies to people in midlife. I gave a talk last year at the local library, and there were a bunch of people there that were unfortunately unemployed. And, you know, I just said, well, if try to do something to give yourself an edge. Read what's in this book, apply what's in this book, because it's not just the five words. There's stuff in here about setting your own vision, mission, and goals, and giving back, and et cetera. And I said, apply these five words, and you got a good chance of, you know, hopefully finding a job sooner than the guy that doesn't do anything that's in this book.
Well, that sounds...
That's a little bit about how it, you know, came about, and, you know, I did a bunch of book signings. I mean, great fun. I did several book signings. I've been on radio locally here. I've been on the local TV. We have a great community education TV station, Port Media, and they filmed all my talks. And so they run them on the local channel, and then they send me the link, and I put that link on my website, and I put the link up on, you know, Facebook and LinkedIn and et cetera. So,
well,
so I have
like-
a lot of fun with the book. Like I said, I've spoken to schools. Last year, this past June, at our local junior high here in Newburyport, each of the teachers took one of the five words. So here it is, a key age group, right? Eighth grade going into ninth grade. Each of the teachers took one of the five words each, which I thought was pretty neat. And at graduation, each one of those teachers talked about, you know, that particular five word. And the importance it would be to the students in their life and their career. So,
well, it sounds like this book can be not only used for students, high school students graduating and so on and so forth, but you mentioned that there were some people in the library that heard you talking. It
yep.
seems to me that this book might be used for anybody that's in any kind of a transition. Whether it's
it's
a transition from high school to college, college to corporate life or business life or whatever, if somebody loses a spouse, any number of things that happen in a person's life where there is a major transition, it sounds as though this book could be useful.
Well, you're right, and it is. Again, you know, the primary audience that I wrote it for was with those 3 million. Young adults, but I've had people in midlife and older come up to me and say they got stuff out of it. You know, I mean, just doing the stuff on vision and goals. I mean, that applies any time of your life. But there's more than the five words. There's all kinds of practical advice. I talk about volunteering in here. I talk about public speaking because so many people are afraid of that. You know, the number one fear in the country is public speaking. Number two is dying.
Yeah.
So I try to tell young people and anybody else in midlife, don't even think of it as public speaking. You know your subject, however, whatever it is. That's like if you're going to talk to us on how to cater and do barbecue. Well, you know your subject, right? So
sure.
Nobody knows that more than you. And just be yourself.
It was amazing because Deborah kept telling me, she kept saying to me, Pete, you need to write a book. Pete, you need to write a book. And I go, who really cares what I think and what I write? You know, people don't care. Well, I'm finding out that people are interested in other people's thoughts, other people's way of doing things, the reasons they've done things, and so on and so forth, and the results that people have had, and people are interested in that. So I've put together a couple of books.
They're in the
proofreading state right now. One of them is Everything I Learned About Business I Found in My Golf Bag. And the other one is a series of articles that I've written, and it's just a collective of articles that I've written that I call Experience Speaks. And after being any number of businesses for any number of years, I've learned an awful lot, and I have a lot of observations. And it's sort of like, here they are, take them or leave them, you know. But there might be something here that you could implement or think
about. Oh, definitely.
About.
So send me an email when those are ready to go, you know.
I'll do that because they're not that far away right now. It's just a question of putting some finishing touches on and designing the cover, and away we go. Let's talk a little bit about your Alzheimer's lessons learned. That's on your website, on your blog site there. How does that figure into it, and what is your experience with that? Because a lot of people our age have an experience with it, and I certainly have mine with my dad. So
you went through it, and you know. And by the way, November is National Alzheimer's Awareness Month.
Mm-hmm.
My mother had this. She diagnosed around 2002, and she died of it in 2007. And she died of Alzheimer's. I made sure that went on the death certificate. You know, it wasn't pneumonia or heart failure. It was Alzheimer's. And, you know, I just saw this beautiful college-educated, talented lady, you know, who could, voracious reader, painter, great cook. She's a home economics teacher. Taught a chef's class. Traveled. Did crosswords. Vivacious lady struck down by this horrible, insidious disease that is right now we have 5.4 million people in the country that have it. And that's diagnosed, and there's several million more that aren't diagnosed. So what happened, Pete, I'm driving home after the services. At the time, we lived in Connecticut, you know, and my mother was buried in Harwich, Mass. On Cape Cod. I'm saying, I just can't let this go. I don't want other families to go through what my two sisters and I and the rest of our family, our kids, you know, my mother's grandkids, what they all went through because they're all so close to her. So I put together a presentation called Alzheimer's Lessons Learned. It's and I get input from my two sisters. And I go through some of the stats at the beginning, depending who the audience is. You know, I tell how many people have it and what the projections are going to be. And by the way, for the baby boomers, there's 77 million of us at current course and speed. 10 million of us are going to get it. I talk about the caregivers. I had a sister that was a caregiver that lived with my mother for 4 years. And everything you read about caregivers, well, she went through it. You know, all the emotional ups and downs that you have, and basically not having a life. So I put all that together. So after I go through some of the background of the disease, the focus is really on the personal journey that I went through and my two sisters and the family, what we learned, what worked, what didn't work. So it's a powerful, emotional talk. I've actually had people in tears at the end. So
it is a very insidious disease, and the only one that I think would be worse, conceivably, to my way of thinking. I mean, here's the way I looked at it with my father. He had Alzheimer's. He was not happy in his, especially as he was going through his process. But at some point, they get to be in their own world, and it's tough for we that are left as caregivers, because we remember what they were, and now they are this completely different person, totally.
Yep.
Completely different person. to the point of here in Arizona, for instance, the Chief Justice or the Justice of the Supreme Court, I can't even think of her name now, the woman that was the Justice of the Supreme Court, her husband had Alzheimer's. And he fell in love as a different person. He fell in love with another woman at the center. And she said that it's not him anymore. It's fine with me because he is not my husband anymore. He has the body of my husband, but he is not my husband. And she could separate herself from that, which is just amazing to me that somebody can do that. But nonetheless, nonetheless, that was her approach to taking it. And those are the kinds of things that happen that people that are not involved with it just don't understand. I know for example that I had to repeatedly train the nurses in the hospital to care for my father because of the bureaucracy of the hospital and what they could and couldn't post by the bed that I put up. That I said, I want you to know this about this man, because if you do A, B, C, and D, you're probably going to get a better result than if you do what you normally do.
Yep.
But they had to take that posting down because of the HIPAA laws and so on and so forth. And it's just one thing after another, after another, after another, another hurdle to jump over, another wall to knock down, another barricade to get around. It's just continually, and it just entirely, makes you completely exhausted and tired, to the point that after 9 years of my mother being the primary caregiver, and myself then helping her towards the end, 3 months after he died, she had a stroke. Now, what does that tell you? It's taken its toll. And people have to understand and realize that. And because it's beyond us all. The only one that I was going to say that I started to say is worse, I think, is Lou Gehrig's disease, because you know that it's happening to you, and
right.
You know that you're cognizant of what's going on. But boy, oh boy, I tell you, it is an insidious disease to watch somebody before your very eyes over a period of time just disintegrate.
Yep, it's horrible, and you know there's 10 million right now unpaid caregivers taking care of their loved ones. I mean, there's so many people that have given up their careers, their jobs to, you know, stay home and take care of dad and mom. So, you know, Henry David Thoreau said it, you know, 150 years ago, you know, that most men live lives of quiet desperation. So when you pass that person in the supermarket coming towards you with their cart, that could be their only hour out of the house for several days.
That's true. That's very true.
Because the rest of the time, they're home, feeding, changing, taking care of dad or mom. And so, again, like I said, 10 million out of the 77 baby boomers at current course and speed, we're going to get it. Research is kind of flat on this, and it's tough. It's the sixth leading cause of death in the United States now. But, like, you know, there's all these other horrible diseases that it competes with for money, for research. You know, like cancer and heart disease and diabetes and, yeah, Lou Gehrig's disease, Parkinson's. You know, my best friend has Parkinson's. There's 1 million people have Parkinson's. There's no cure for that.
Right.
And we have over 5 million people with Alzheimer's. Again, no cure at the moment. So.
Yeah, and these drugs that they use, that say that it slows the rate, it doesn't even do that good a job.
It didn't work for my mother. It does for some people, but from what I've read and heard, but it didn't for our mother. So
we've had a good number of Alzheimer's specialists and caregivers and experts on this show from time to time, and that seems to be the consensus that it's probably 50-50 at best that it does that it actually slows it. For every one that says it seems to have slowed the onset, there's going to be another one that says it had no effect whatsoever.
Yep.
And I know my dad was one that had no recognizable effect. Let's put it that way. Let's talk about something a little bit more upbeat.
Yes, yeah, we'll try to end on an upbeat the last few minutes here.
Exactly. So, first of all, what does the future hold for Fran Larkin? What are you looking to do? What are you working on?
Well, I'm working on the memoir of growing up on Cape Cod in the 50s and the 60s. It ends when I went off to college in September of 1964, but it's not just the traditional memoir. It's a lot of it, Pete, is what was it like to be there for the birth of rock and roll, which I was there.
Uh-huh.
I was born in 46, so I was there to see all that stuff go on. I was there for civil rights. I was there for the Cold War. I still remember standing outside seeing that first Sputnik go over from the Russian Sputnik, not ours, in 1957. And so what was it like growing up with that, you know, sort of Damascalese overhanging you called the Cold War? And then, you know, going through the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962. All that's in there. And I growing up on Cape Cod, President Kennedy, you know, being elected in 1960, just 12 miles away. Living up there in the compound, and of course when he was assassinated, I talk about that. I talk about the British invasion, okay, not in 1776, but the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and the Animals. And so, you know, what was it like growing up back then, and you know, what did you do every day? And so a lot of that's in there. Some history of Cape Cod is in there, and there's a bunch of stories and stuff, a lot I've never heard before. Even my kids haven't heard some of this stuff, and my wife. So I'm working on that. I have one blog that I do for the local hospital on how to live a healthy life, but I have the blog set up, and what I'm going to be doing is writing every month on retirement issues, not just this kind of stuff, but that'll be part of it. But it's also going to be some ideas on how we can create jobs, how we can raise some money. You know, a lot of the stuff is tied to the current events. But I'm going to probably label myself as, you know, Fran the retired guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you heard of Joe the Plumber back in the 2008 campaign. Well, that's going to be my tagline, Fran the retired guy.
There's a major difference, though, Fran. You can speak intelligently.
Well, yeah, but I'm going to do a lot more painting. You know, I mentioned earlier I've taken painting and drawing classes. I really love it. I did it when I was young, got away from it. So, all right, here's a chance called retirement. So I've got a whole stack of pictures that I've taken here, and I'm looking at my easel. I have a blank canvas there, and I've got a stack of pictures that I'm going to start painting. So I'll be doing that. I'm going to be working on poetry. We have a brand new, beautiful granddaughter that was born 5.5 weeks ago and down in Connecticut. So we're going to be spending more time with her. In fact, we're going down there Saturday. So that'll be, that's exciting to see. You know, I got my Medicare card a couple months ago, and then this is our first grandchild. So two more examples of retirement and being a baby boomer is here. So,
well, I tell you, you say this is your first grandchild?
Yes.
Well, I've got two granddaughters, 1 5 and 1 2, and I tell you, there is no greater joy than watching these two and interacting with these two, and they are as different as day and night. And but both intelligent and very alert and wise young people. I mean, they never cease to amaze you. And they come over and they've spent the weekends with us a couple of times when the parents were when my daughter and her husband were taking a trip or whatever, and we get them on Saturday or Friday night and take them back on Sunday. And on Monday, I have to rest all day long just because I had those two little ones with us. But, boy, I tell you, it's the best feeling you can ever have. It's amazing.
Oh, it's great. Great.
And you're gonna enjoy it. You're going to enjoy it. There's no doubt about it. Nothing like it.
And the other thing I'm going to do is just continue to promote my book. I've got some ideas. I'm going to send copies to the Morning Joe show. I'm going to send copies to Chris Matthews. and some other people, I'm going to stress the importance of education that everybody talks about and how this book can help the students. I'm going to be writing to more principals and superintendents of the school so I can speak to more kids. So that's what I'll be doing when I'm not doing all those other things I mentioned.
Well, your plate is full, Fran. There's no doubt about it. Your plate is full. And I'd like to thank you for spending the time you spent with us today and taking time from your busy schedule and your full plate to spend a little time with the Boomer and the Babe Show. It's been a lot of fun having you as a guest.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. It's been great.
Well, we'll keep in touch with each other and send along any of your books or whatever, and I'll do the same for you when I get my done.
Definitely do that when that book of yours is ready.
Yeah, we'll make sure we get that done. So thanks again, and enjoy the rest of your retirement and your granddaughter.
All righty. Thanks so much, Pete. Appreciate it very much. Take care.
Thank you, Grant. Have a great day. Yep. You've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show here on Blog Talk Radio, where we bring good conversation to the world. We brought you a conversation with Mr. Fran Larkin, writer, blogger, and author. And speaker, all about retirement and his retirement activities, as well as what he can give and let people understand a little bit more about what's expected in retirement, what you can expect in retirement, and how you can make that a very successful part of your life. So we enjoyed that, and I hope you did as well. We're going to be back again tomorrow. Deborah will be here. She'll be having her guests. It's going to be basically her show. I'm going to engineer it, and she's going to do the hosting or hostessing. And she'll be on with a lady by the name of Nancy Mills about a new project that Nancy's working on and that Deborah is involved in helping her do that. So it's an excellent project for women. So anything involved with the women is somewhere where Deborah is definitely involved herself. She's always a big proponent of female gender supporting themselves, making themselves better, and enjoying their lives as well, with or without us guys. So that's kind of the way that that happens to break out for a lot of us, I think. Remember, we do more than host this show on Blog Talk Radio. Check us out on BoomerAndTheBabe.com. That's BoomerAndTheBabe.com. See everything else that's involved. Be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life, and enjoy the rest of your day, and look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Come on by and listen to what Deborah has to say with her guest, Nancy Mills. Have a great day. To the Boomer and the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.